Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
This is Kathy Campanelli, and you are listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast. Let's get cereal.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here, and today on Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate, is someone who is an upcoming in the wrestling community. He is part of the SCW Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions, Thumb and Finger. I never thought I'd say that in my life. The one and only Jared Thumb. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing just fine, man, today. Nice, peaceful day outside, so hard to hate it.
You know, starting off, if people aren't familiar with you, just give a little backstory on how you got interested in pro wrestling.
Well, I say it started back when I was like a toddler, definitely. We used to have like a VHS tape, and I know my parents would like do the flipping of the channels of WCW and WWF Attitude back in the day. Not really much fond memories of the whole shows itself, but the pay-per-views and the videotape. Like, we had Hell Yeah, Stone Cold Steve Austin's home video. That was the one that I watch like all the time, basically. And then we have, I think the second one we got was Eve of Vengeance. So it was like a compilation of like all the brutal matches that have happened in their history, and it like started with Mankind, The Undertaker at King of the Ring, then it goes to Steel Cage with Austin and McMahon.
Did you, when you saw that, you know, that kind of brutality, was that something that you were drawn to?
I certainly was. I was like, I certainly thought, I mean, you wouldn't expect from a kid seeing something like that, like saying, oh, I want to do that one day. Like, I think I brought up that conversation like at the wrong time with my parents watching the Hell in a Cell and seeing Mankind get thrown off and through the cell. I want to do this one day. And I think my mom, like, trying to remember back then, I think she gave me the craziest look ever and was like, oh God, I don't want to get thrown off and through the cell. I was like, geez. Oh man.
When you look at it now and knowing what goes into wrestling, having trained at the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy, do you now realize that that was something that is probably once in a lifetime that we'll never see something that like that again? And do you feel a little more safer?
Yes, because like as I got older, obviously I knew it was like very brutal. Like back then, I don't know, I was raised around an era where fans were bloodthirsty, and whenever somebody was getting their ass kicked, basically just like, oh man, this is awesome. Just like, oh man, he's bleeding all over the face and everything like that. I mean, if I was a kid and I was exposed to ECW back then, oh
yeah,
I wouldn't be able to tell what type of wrestler I'd be today. Oh God.
Well, speaking of the type of wrestler you are today, you did wrestle in high school. What was that experience like for you? And how was it in terms of translating grappling into the professional wrestling ring?
It was actually in middle school where I did the wrestling. Then I focused more on football in high school. But the way it transitioned was fairly similar. Like, I still do the double leg takedowns, waist locks, and like headlocks, everything like that. Just like your normal regular wrestling like stuff. some cradles sometimes, not a lot of them, but especially like depending on how you wrestle in the ring, the one had people saying hi me out here. Yeah. But definitely, like, you know, the back bridge where you get on your head and like just bridge off, it's a lot easier for me to do that today. But if I wasn't able to do that back then, have a strong neck, I could definitely tell you it would probably be a lot different, because not a lot of people can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And, you know, that's, you know, I think you just brought up a great point, and that is, you know, the physical conditioning. Being that you did Greco-Roman and you did football, how was it transitioning into the conditioning into the ring, in terms of when, you know, you're getting broke in, you're doing a lot of different, whether it's repetitions of running the ropes or, you know, bumps or even calisthenics, were you prepared to see that much work going into, you know, getting your body conditioned?
I absolutely looked into seeing, like, working way differently than anything else that I've ever put work to do in my life. Because in football and, like, mat wrestling, we'd work to be speed edge-like and being able to use our hips and footwork. Professional wrestling ring, we do kind of the same thing, but in a different sense. Like, footwork, you need to know your footing in the ring. Like, you need to know your positioning. You need to know, like, all of this. So it's like, it's definitely something that took a lot of adjusting to when I first got in, because as a green kid, I knew when I was breaking in at first, I could definitely see, like, how I wrestled and how I wrestle now. Fairly different from when I first started, because when I first started, I just did moves to do moves, and now I try to make sense of what can I do to make this look realistically storytelling, because that's like my big thing. Like, I see people go do flips and everything like that. I know I'm not the type of guy that's going to get on a turnbuckle and do like a moonsault or something like that. And I see some big guys do it, but I'm like, physically, like, I've never really done a backflip on myself before in my life. So I don't think I'm going to attempt to do it off a turnbuckle if that's what it's going to take, because I mean, I've grown from what I looked like, and now I'm like a lot bigger than what I was when I first started.
I think that I saw something regarding that you turn into almost a different animal when you're working out, and especially if Nickelback comes on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I don't know why people hate Nickelback so much. Like, I love hearing like a Nickelback song just pop up on my playlist, depending on which one it is. Cause like, you got your slower Nickelback songs.
Right.
I think the one that popped up that day was Feed the Machine. And I mean, that song for some reason just gets me going. Just like the intro into it, into a set, just gets me going. Like, my music taste, I like about anything. So, like, I mean, people give me crap all the time. Oh, you like that Nickelback stuff? I hate it. They tell me this, but last year there was a fair, and Nickelback was playing one of the nights, and it just so happened that people that hated Nickelback were there watching them live. And I'm like, oh, so you're going to call me out for this, but what are you going to do if I say, oh, I saw you at Nickelback last night? Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, I sure as hell did.
When you're in the gym and something like that comes on and you start to get into the zone, what is it that pushes you through? I know that a lot of times when, you know, people are working out, and especially if you're trying to get into conditioning for a wrestling ring, I mean, you really do have to have stamina, and you also have to have strength. What is it that you've been focused on? Like you said, you've gotten bigger. Is it something that you've personally taken the ability to look into, or is this something that you've gotten guidance from, like, Merrick and the school, your trainers? You know, what is your regimen, and what are you goaling, I guess, to do?
The one thing that I always set out when I go into a weight room or gym, I want to be known that, like, when you see me walk into the door, I'm going to be one of the hardest working MFers there, basically. That's what I'll sugarcoat it, so I don't really get people a little mad at those words. But, you know, I want to be known, like, you see me walk in, oh, he's back. Like, there's a couple of people that go to the gym and just, like, talk the whole time, and then you see me come in, pop my headphones in, just sit there, stretch out for about 5 minutes, and then I go in and I start doing my heavy lifting. And, I mean, my conditioning, I haven't really done a lot of running or anything, but I do a lot of supersets to really get blood to flow right into my muscles. I've really been focusing more on building strength and kind of bulking a lot right now. And, I mean, I still kind of, it's like you got to be able to control your breath, because I actually, one thing I do use when I work out is the DDPY app.
Okay.
Because I do DDPY every now and again, because those workouts, like when we were in pandemic, couldn't go anywhere. That's what I did. And when I got back in the gym after doing DDPY for about 2 months, my strength for like barbell lifting has gone up. And like my physique has changed. My whole body feels a lot different and a lot like less, I guess, strain on it.
Yeah.
I was like, always have to listen to what Dallas would say, make the DDPY your own. Sure as heck, you can make it your own. And I use the heart monitor when I go in.
Yep.
So, like, you can kind of see your levels, where you're at, and know where your working set's at.
Yeah.
And kind of know how much calories you're burning. Like, I like taking notes on that, like, myself, to know, okay, I did this day. How hard should I work the very next day?
Right. Yeah, that's working smarter, not harder. You know, you brought up a good point, too. With Dallas's program, what's very interesting is you're still a young cat, man. And by doing this now, what you're doing is essentially extending your body's, you know, longevity, basically, which is great, because you just said it, 2 months, all of a sudden you're seeing, you know, positive results. Do you feel that with finding that and the pandemic going on, that it's almost easier, even though you like the gym, it's almost easier to do something using that app and keeping yourself motivated and keeping yourself healthy? Whereas, you know, sometimes you get ready to go to the gym, you get in the car, you start driving, you're just like, yeah, you know, maybe I'll just kind of make a left turn and go the other way. Is it easier to find the motivation in the app and at home, or are you really, truly, you know, just kind of in love with the gym?
I'd say, like, there's some days where my motivation will lack, but, like, the one thing that helps me keep consistent is scheduling it through my app. Like, okay, I need to go in this day, no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Right.
the one thing about it is I really didn't really start noticing it till I'd say when I started doing DDPY. Like, I did it for a brief period in end of 2017 to start of 2018. Then I stopped for a bit, and then I started doing it again this year. But the one thing I did not stop doing was listening to Paige talk.
Yeah.
Like, DDP is probably one of the most positive guys in the world, honestly.
Yep.
Like, that guy, he can share an experience any way he can, and he, like, tries to apply it to anybody in this world so they can make it work for themselves. And that's, like, why I listen to him a lot, and I listen to a lot of other people as well, kind of branching out. But the one guy that I listen to a lot is definitely Paige on the app with the Motivational Mondays and everything like that.
Funny little side note. There was, this is about 10 years ago or so, and Dallas was helping me out, and I'm at Paige's place. We're sitting down, and he wanted to just kind of get my my heart rate just flat, sitting down, you know, just, you know, resting heart rate. And he's got the watch in his hand, and I've got the heart monitor on. And he's sitting there, and he's watching. And all of a sudden, he starts getting a look on his face. He's very worried, and he gets more worried. He was like, "Bro, your heart is exploding. What's going on?" Now, I'm sitting there calm as can be. Nothing's happening. I'm like, I don't know. I'm starting to, you know, get a little nervous now, right? And he's like, this is crazy, because it's just, the numbers are just going up, up, up. And then finally he looks and he goes, "Oh, bro, sorry. I'm looking at the stopwatch, not the heart monitor." Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's, you know, and it's so funny because he's so positive that when you see him kind of get worried, like, it's like, "Oh no, what's going on? I mean, I feel fine." And it was good. So let's bring it to the Black and Brave Academy. What motivated you to go to them, and how did you start off? Like, how do they start off their training, I should say? When you walk through the door, what is the first couple days like?
Well, when I went in, it was still a little bit more, I guess, a bit stricter then, but it's basically, they call it Hell Week is what I call it, because, like, the very first day you walk in, PT test, basically, See where we're at, and see if you really want to do this, or if you paid $3,500 to be a mark for Seth Rollins, basically, and meet him. But because there's people that they'll do that, like, "Oh, I'll become his friend and everything like that," and it's like, he's here to train you, man. There's a let him put his knowledge on you and everybody else around you. Don't come here and think you're going to make friends and get signed to NXT or something like that.
Yeah.
Because people go there thinking that, and I'm like, I'm just coming here because I want to learn to wrestle. But right. Yeah. First day, big conditioning test. I can't exactly remember everything. All I know is we started with death by burpees, and we ended with death by burpees. So we did death by burpees, got some water, did some other workouts, got more water, did another CrossFit workout, got some water, another CrossFit workout, and got some more water. And then we did death by burpees. And we started at like 8 o'clock. We didn't get out of there till like 1 in the morning. because we also sat down for like an entire hour and just asked some questions before we left that night. Obviously, if you made it through that, you're going to have some questions. And
yeah.
me being who I was at the time, I'll admit I was still kind of a little bit of a mark.
Sure.
Asked, it was 2017, obviously WrestleMania 33, and they were like building some stuff with Triple H and him. I'm like, do you guys think you're going to be facing each other at WrestleMania? And then he's like, he really didn't say much. He's like, I don't know. Never say never. And then Merrick's like, I don't know, Jared. Do you think they're going to face each other at WrestleMania? With a smirk on his face. Because it's like, go in there, basically clean shaven, a big baby face looking, not even 19-year-old. I think it was 19. Yeah. Big baby face, 19-year-old, walking in just like, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? Well, yeah. But that's basically first day. Second day, we start to learn to take some bumps and run ropes and everything like that. The ropes we used are way different from WWE. Is the cable ropes. You know, because obviously, like, the real ropes and the cable ropes are so much of a big difference that I just learned that I actually was able to get into a ring with real ropes.
Yeah.
And they're so much different, but
the cable ropes fucking they hurt after a while, man.
Yes. Yes. The real ropes that I just recently was able to get in a ring for, I actually didn't mind them. They're a lot easier for me to run ropes and stuff because, like, the one reason why cables are like so, like, they have that, like, tubing for, like, a hose around it. And, right. Oh, God, I remember seeing my back after that. I still have scars from that day.
Yep.
Just because of how calloused my back got from it. I mean, my mom got so concerned and was like, what is that? And I'm like, I ran ropes. She's like, she just kind of looked at me like, you're telling me those ropes do this number on your body? And I was like, have you not watched Tough Enough? Even if it's a reality show, you see how marked up their backs got after that?
Yeah.
That's what I was like. I expected everything to be tough going in, but I trained myself mentally to basically say, I don't care how tough it gets. I don't care how dumb I might sound sometimes. I'm going to make it through this, and I'm going to be a wrestler. So, like, that first whole week, basically, was a lot of conditioning, a lot of bumps, and a lot of running ropes, and some regular stuff.
So, when you finally, you know, obviously, when you continue, you start to learn not only moves, but how to put matches together and, you know, how do you start interpreting, like you said earlier, the stories into the moves. How long did it take you to get that crack at the first match, and how good or bad was your first match looking back?
My first match, I remember, I wasn't originally booked for it. We went up to Dubuque, Iowa, SCW. I just show up early, setting up ring and stuff. And this guy named Johnny Wisdom, with his manager at the time, was Mark Storm. Go in, then all of a sudden, my assistant trainer, Matt Mayday, better known as Crotch, he comes up to me. I'm going to try and do my best Crotch impersonation. Jared, do you have your gear on you? Well, yes, I have my gear on me. You taught me the rules. Bring my gear every show. Great. You're working a Johnny night. And I'm like, the switch, like, from being totally calm to very nervous was like that. And I was like, what? Because I never worked in front of the crowd. So I was like, oh, am I going to shit the bed? Am I going to go out there and have a good match? Or boom, 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 boom. And then I think Merrick told me a story how he went up with Johnny that night. he's like, hey, you're working our new kid, Thumb over here. And I think Johnny says, oh, I got it. I've worked new kids before. And then America's like saying, just be a little easy on him. He's a little nervous. And I was like, I mean, I can't admit that I wasn't nervous, but I'll tell you, my first set of gear, I still have to this day. Never wear it anymore because it don't fit. It was, I don't even remember why I started wearing it. Everybody just thought it would look so good on me. It was a pair of overalls. I cut off the pant legs on them to make it look like a singlet. I don't even know what I was shooting for back then, but I was like, oh, this would look cool. I just threw it on and everybody thought that they loved it. And it was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. That's, yeah. Well, you know, that's funny because Haystacks Calhoun used to wrestle in that exact type thing where it was like jort overalls. How much shit did you get from the boys on the house?
Oh man, people looked at me and they're like, I don't know what it is, but I love it. They're like, they just love the look because it was like, it looked so cheesy and it looked so perfect on me because like I was a gullible son of a bitch. And I was like, well, I guess this is what I'll do, guys. And I remember going into the match. I go out and everybody was like, since I was Jared Thumb, I remember one of the chants I got at me that night. Not, they all didn't say it, but a fan screamed at me and called me Hacksaw Jim Duggan Jr. because I kept putting my thumb up and everything. And I was like, well, I mean, funny story about that is I didn't get to wrestle with them, but I did have a part in one of his matches at SCW. Uh-huh. I got taken out of the occasion with my former tag partner, Finger, and he goes out. They face the infamous Vicious and Delicious Jossie and JT Energy. Jossie was going to hit him with the board, and I got taken out of the occasion, but then I come out back through the curtain, make like a leap of faith, putting my arm over the top rope, grabbing that 2x4, and just like going absolutely nuts. It was a cool moment. And like, a part of me was like, okay, do this for a show, but also part of me was like, dude, I'm like, I kind of get to be in a ring with a WWE Hall of Famer. So it was like trying not to mark out moment and stuff like that.
It's, you know, I think what happens is that I think that sometimes, wrestlers, because they don't want to seem corny or whatever, they won't admit that they still have little bits of marking out or fandom inside of them. And, you know, moments like that, yeah, you should, you know, take it in for all it's worth because you only get, you know, one chance potentially in your life to experience that particular moment. So,
yeah.
What was it like when you guys ended up getting the tag titles? Was that something that you were prepared for, or was it something, was it more of a reward for your work and effort, or was it something that you didn't even like see coming?
I look at it more as a journey, because like when I got taken out in 2017 with a diagnosis of cancer, I told myself, first step is get back in the ring and be cleared. You know, I want to get back in there and do my thing. And then I get back in the ring do my thing and everything and that. We, it was 2019. 2018 was about getting back in and everything. 2019, I kept telling myself, it's time. We need to get a tag belt. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not going to pitch the idea. I'm not going to do that or anything like that. I'm just going to wait for the moment. Because, you know, but come to find out, we started booking in my hometown in Muscatine. First show we had, I opened the show, and I mean, it was awesome. Like, it was a singles match, but it was pretty cool. The second show we had in Muscatine, after building a story with the tag champions at the time, Infamy, which it was Dion Roosman and Robin Steele who were the champions. But that night, Robin Steele wasn't at the show. He couldn't make it. So they put in Joe Asa. And those guys, like, from a professional aspect and everything like that, just really, really good guys working the ring, just because they know how to work and know how to make stuff make sense. That, like, it's like work. You look at it from their point of view, they're like a pack of wolves, and you're basically the hunters trying to take them down. But when they start working together, you're basically done for. That's like, that was my favorite story of that. But once you kind of can get the pack separated from it, you can start rocking and rolling from there. But the whole match we did in Muscatine, I don't remember how long we were supposed to go. I think we went a little too early. It was like a 10-minute match,
okay,
main event. And the finish was built up. JP, for the longest time, would act like he was going to put on a figure four leg lock.
Okay.
And he never got it. He always, like, was trying to figure it out and everything like that. He ended up doing a taker dive in our match, and he ended up doing the figure four leg lock for the finish. And that crowd lost it, because that was, like, literally something built for years. And then they're like, finally got the payoff with it, and we won the belts in my hometown. Wow. I mean, we lost them in December of that year, but we had a, it was awesome. But now the storyline we got going now is way different, because Thumb and Finger are no longer together, because last show we had in our hometown, we were challenging for the belts and we lost. We, you know, we're gonna get up, do the whole baby face thing, raise our arms, yeah, thank you. He clotheslines me and starts beating me up. He gets out of the ring, and I don't know if this is stupid on my part, but he gets a chair, and you know how everybody's so scandalous of taking a chair shot to the head?
Yeah.
Oh, beforehand, I told him, give it to the head. Give it to the head. I'll get my hands up. And sure as hell, I did, and everybody thought I got color. Like, I got to the back, they're like, you okay? And I'm like, of course I'm okay. We got to exactly what we needed. Because those fans were so shocked, because it was our hometown show. Yeah. He's from New Boston, which is like 15 minutes away. He has people there for him. I have people there for me. People are there to see us do our thing in my hometown. And then they just got ripped away from them. And it's genius. We haven't gotten me back in because of the pandemic, but anything. I've been working with a show also in Iowa, Central Empire Wrestling. We actually recorded some stuff called Central Empire Wrestling Power Slam. It's going to be on YouTube soon.
Okay.
But it should be shared on their page. I should be sharing it on my Instagram and everything like that. But SCW is still running shows, And the last show I was at that I remember hearing, JP went out there, faced Dante Leon. He's gone the mic before Dante even comes out, and people are already chanting, "We want Thumb." And it's been 4 months since that moment, and people still want this. This is like the one storyline that I think is going to be really personal, because
sure.
He did go see me in the hospital and everything like that when I had cancer. So this whole thing can get really personal really quick, yeah. Which will be like money. Yeah. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm just saying, wait for a perfect time, because yep. I guess the way I'll say it is vengeance is on its way and Judgment Day is almost here. And Jared Thumb from years ago wouldn't say something like that, but the persona has literally just changed. Like,
sure.
I thought it was the birthday boy, thought it was radioactive, blah, 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 blah. I thought it was a hillbilly Jared Thumb. Now it's just me, just regular Jared Thumb at his best. And take what I see and do what I do and roll with it, you know? That's the whole plan at this point.
So it's really I guess the word that I can muster up is inspiring. You know, with your cancer diagnosis and going through treatment, how long did it take you to get that feeling back where, you know, you've gone through everything and now you're starting to feel a little bit normal again, you know, getting back into training and routine and, you know, and what was it that kept you motivated throughout the whole time? Because, you know, obviously you're dealing with something that's very heavy and, mm-hmm. you know, you're able to overcome it and, you know, go on to start a great career. So what was that time period like for you, man?
That whole time period when it first happened, like, how it first happened, I thought it was a sports injury because I got hit under a jaw. Deja vu was actually a scramble match somewhere in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And it just so happened a person that hit me on the jaw was JP by an accident. Like, you know, the whole Stone Cold Undertaker thing that happened in 98 where Taker flipped his hair up, hit Austin right on the jaw, knocked him out.
Yeah.
That's intense what JP did to me on the outside of the ring, except he didn't knock me out. Really hurt my jaw. But he was like, he told me he thought I was bleeding, but nope. And he really nailed me, and he was surprised he didn't knock me out. Like, I've taken a lot of people's hardest shots, but that happened. We had to catch a dive right after that because scramble match, a lot of spots.
All right.
A week or two starts swelling up here. So I'm like, is this like a sports related injury? Because, like, it hurts. And I go to the doctor, and he thinks it's sports related. And, well, bad part about it was I didn't have health insurance then. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a real shit situation. I go into it, and a month it starts going down. But then a week later, two spots come out of the side of my face. So, he's like, I think we're going to do a CT scan now. So, about 2 months now, they figured out it was cancer, and then they want to do I don't want to say the wrong word. I think it was a biopsy, because autopsies on dead bodies.
Yeah,
it was a biopsy. Biopsy. I go in, I'm awake the whole time. They're like doing their needles in my face, and then they confirm that it is it was lymphoma. So blood cancer. So I got, and they couldn't get me into the hospital up there because they're more working with University of Iowa, they work with more kids and elderly people.
Sure.
So they sent me to a place in Moline. They told me they don't have any room for me, but they can put me on a waiting list.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So I think my mom was really happy about that call. I think I remember a lot of words being exchanged in that. But that might, yeah. But you can't blame her for that.
Cause yeah.
The medical system putting you on a list for something that's deadly. That's basically the way I took it, was F you, kind of like figure it out yourself type of deal. Yeah. And I mean, the medical field has a lot of stuff they have to do, because my aunt's a nurse, my grandma's a nurse, and I have a lot of family in the field. But they can also agree with me that a lot of times when they catch something, it's a little long to find out.
Yeah.
But yeah, my grandma took it into her hands, called St. Jude's down in Peoria. They brought me there. They got my records in and everything like that. Yeah, I got diagnosed in September 2017 officially, but I started chemo in October. Okay. After that. Right. And like when I first got in, started and basically sat there for like a whole week. And I wasn't expecting to be there that long, but I was there, hung out, got all that stuff done. Counts are good, go home. The way they do it is you go in and do your treatments. Since they're so intense, depending on how your immune system is at the end, if it's good counts and everything, you just go home.
Yeah.
If it's not, they'll keep you for a couple of days and let you get back to normal. So it's like, you know, watching out for your enemy and anything like that. It was, I think the one part, like at first, you know, mentally, I wasn't there. Mentally, it was like, well, I just got my wrestling career ripped away from me.
Right.
I can't go to the gym. I can't do all the stuff I want to do. But at first, you're kind of just like, when you first get told, you're like, what did I do wrong? You know, like that's the one thing that's like, oh, what did I do wrong?
Right.
But then about 2 weeks later, this is going to be brutally honest. I said, fuck it. I'm going to beat this thing to the ground and I don't care what it takes. I'm going to get back to normal. Like, that's the one thing with me. Like, if I get rubbed into something that I can't control at first, I'm going to make the best of the situation and find motivation to say, all right, you're going to play by your rules. Well, I got a couple of tricks up my sleeves to let you know that I ain't a quitter. You know, like I don't quit on stuff easily. If I end up quitting on something, there's got to be a logical reason for it. But it was in December where it was gone. Thanksgiving had come around. I got a fever, so I had to go up for Thanksgiving. Didn't have Thanksgiving dinner. But they let me go home on Black Friday. But I didn't go out anywhere. But we had to deal with traffic in Peoria on Black Friday.
Yeah.
Go all the way home. So that really sucked. But it was all fine then. December came around. It was all done. We have an event for SEW called the Prestige Rumble. It's basically our version of the Royal Rumble. I wanted to enter in that, but I still had my port in my chest.
Okay.
Like, I got a scar still right there from it, because they cut it in, put one of the tubes down my jugular right here.
Wow.
Everything like that. Yeah. And let me tell you, when I get chopped in that area in a match, it's like, oh God, it hurts like a bitch.
Wow.
And then I tell people, like, it doesn't hurt as bad now, but it still hurts pretty bad at this point. But if somebody chops me there, I'll give them one back. And they're like, I just chopped you on the chest. I'm like, did you not see a spot on my chest? I mean, I've worked some guys that have chopped me there, and it didn't really hurt, but it sounded great. So it didn't really bother me.
Right.
But, yeah, like, I wanted to get into that Prestige Rumble. My immune system was not great for it. I asked my doctor, what about this next event that's coming up, Genesis? It's the week right after the Prestige Rumble. I get the clear. Just don't do anything stupid because I have my port still in my chest. And I was like, so no high spots or anything like that. And I was doing DDP yoga at this point to try and get my body reconstructed into ring form.
Right.
And for a month that I did it, I felt amazing.
Yeah.
Especially with a port in my chest, just worked everything. I felt amazing. Bodily wise, I didn't look very amazing because I didn't really work out for a while, so my muscle mass wasn't there, and I had some glove handles on me. Hell, I still have glove handles on me. I really don't give a crap at that point. I see people that have glove handles on them all the time, but I think if you look at me, you could still see the muscle definition that I have in my arms and my chest.
Sure.
But, you know, it's definitely one thing that's kind of hard to take care of, but the one thing, like, I go in and I got the clear for Genesis. I was in a 6-man tag. It was Sensei Bach, his protege at the time. Mike Heights was his work name. And at the time, Wilhelm Emery, but he is now Victor Analog.
Okay.
He changed his gimmick. And they were accompanied to the ring by the king at that place, Young Steven Youngblood. And I tagged with Crotch and JP. And I was the surprise entrant, so that pop was pretty big for the time. And I mean, the match, oh boy, a match wasn't really good, but the moment was cool.
Well,
I mean
come on, you hit the mountaintop with the pop, and then, you know, where do you go from there?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, a lot of positioning was kind of off in the match, but it was still a cool moment and everything. People still talk about it to this day and everything. I mean, I've tried to go a lot of places, my gimmick and everything like that, because, like, I don't know where my gimmick's supposed to be. I was getting somewhere with the birthday boy, Jared Thumb, definitely, but I go to, like, some promotions. They tell me they like me as a star-studded baby face over a comedy guy, because I just have that look, like,
right.
And I mean, I've been doing comedy for a while, because, like, for a while I'm always the guy that gets ribbed. Like, I always get ribbed with some, like, funny rib of the day. Like, if you ask Merrick, if you ask any of the boys of the Black and Brave, I always get ripped. It's pretty funny. Like, one of the ones that I actually laugh about to this day, like, I laugh about it, but at the time I was kind of pissed because I was like, what the hell? But I'm in a car ride going home from Indianapolis with JP, Jossie, Brady McBride, and I think it was Sage Kanan. We're all in this car. We're going home. And then I don't remember what they said, but they were, like, saying that Rollins wasn't happy with me for something. And I believed them because they had it set up that it looked like it was actually him messaged them. And I was like, yeah, see? I was like, tell him to call the arena in Haha Butsum, Canada, but they said it so wrong that I didn't realize they were saying pajama bottom, and I was going along with it because I had no clue. And then I end up getting a call, and then Jossie, love Ja to death, definitely do. He's one of my boys. He's like, you better answer that call. And I did. And then all of a sudden I hear a voice in the car. And like, basically the rib was, they made me think I got kicked out of Black and Brave. And I thought Colby was calling me. And I answer it. And he does his Beth Seth Rollins voice. He's like, this is Colby. I'm like, you motherfucker. And then everybody in the car just starts dying because they just convinced me that I got kicked out of the Black and Brave. And they used to do this thing on Twitter called Thumbtalks, and they put this on Thumbtalks, and they're like, hey Thumb, even though you got kicked out of the Black and Brave, can we still do Thumbtalks? And then I say, hell no, Thumbtalks is over, I'm pissed. And they posted that, and I'm like, I remember that night because it was funny as hell now. But at night, I was like, oh my God, this is... But no, at night, I'm definitely somebody that gets ribbed pretty easily if I let you at this point. Like, now I can identify when I'm getting ribbed and everything like that. And I'm sure. Like, no. And then they'll just keep going until I actually go into it. And I'm like, fine, I'll do it for your sake.
Well,
but I know.
You know what, though? That breaks up the, you know, the monotony of, you know, traveling that far. That's, you know, not an easy drive. And
no.
And you're an easy target. So, yeah, I could see it.
Well, I do. The one thing that made me feel a bit better about it, I think I heard a story on a podcast how these guys would always rib DDP as well, because he would apparently be the one guy that would get ribbed a lot. But now they're like, oh man, I'll go to him for this answer. And it's like, maybe I'm the next DDP.
There you go.
Hey. Not in like that aspect, but yeah. I mean, honestly, it's one of my goals to probably meet him. But one of my biggest guys like that I want to meet is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Favorite wrestler, man. Like, what can you do?
Sure. I mean, that's, you know, the thing is that if you keep at it and you keep, you know, you keep making the dreams come true, it's not going to be too long before, you know, that you get a chance to meet a guy like Austin or, and you've never talked to DDP at all?
No, I have not, actually. I actually sent something to him over Twitter recently. It was a picture of one of those Nitro Brawlers or something like that, like those little plush, like, stuffed plush animals or something like that.
Yeah.
And I sent it, and I'm like, maybe he would like to see this. And I sent it, and, like, the DDPY thing actually liked it and then sent something with Paige on it. And I'm like, thought he'd enjoy that. Just like, I know, since I'm a member of their program and stuff, if I was in Georgia, I think I could call their performance center, because I also got other contacts in Georgia, because I did a seminar with Glacier and I got,
oh yeah, sure,
contacts to go to his facility. I don't know if he remembers me, but if I told him I did a seminar and stuff, he says he'd let me go there. One guy he says that does show up there a lot is Cody.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Glacier and Cody are... Glacier, Ray helped Cody move... Cody and Brandy move into their new house last year. So, yeah, they're really tight, and... And DDP and Cody are really tight, and yeah, it's amazing how, you know, everyone's just so supportive of each other as well. Let me wrap this up really quick. If there's one thing that you're looking forward to when the pandemic is done and people can get back and see live wrestling, what is the one thing that you're really looking forward to?
I'm going to say probably being in front of a live crowd, being able to interact with the audience and, you know, without having to worry about anybody getting sick or anything like that. Like, just kind of back to normal, like being able to be there, interact, you know, take pictures, anything like that. I'm a pretty quiet guy for some of the time, but when you start talking to me, I'm like, I'll usually talk back. Like, I'm a friendly person.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, I hope that, that we get to a point where we can do things again without, you know, having much of a risk. Especially too, that, you know, you had cancer. You know, it'd be nice to get to a point where you're able to take pictures with fans without having to just second guess in your mind, you know, could I possibly get sick from taking a picture? You know, it's crazy right now.
Yeah.
So hopefully that goes great and, you know, we see you very soon. You know, I encourage everyone, we're big fans of, you know, the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy, and SCW is doing some really good work, you know, in, I guess for what is, would it be considered the tri-state area or, you know, the Midwest? So if you see them in your local community, please go out and support them. And if you keep your eyes peeled for any shows that Jared's doing, follow him on social media. Jared, what is your social media contacts?
My social media for Twitter is Jared at Jared, and my Instagram is also at Jared. Pretty simple.
Awesome.
Just keep it simple for everybody.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, I hope that, you know, for listeners out there who aren't familiar with you, I hope that listeners, you do check him out and start following his career now, because, you know, 5 years from now, you can say, hey, I knew this guy, you know, way back when he was just, you know, starting that trajectory to you know, become an AEW wrestler or a WWE wrestler. So, you know, just nothing but positive thoughts, brother. And we hope that we'll see you in the ring again very soon. And everyone listening, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.